Hi, everyone. This is Lessons in Leadership, Steve Adubato with my colleague, Mary Gambit. Mary, recently I sat down with Kevin O'Toole, the chairman of the board of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, and Rick Cotton, the executive director of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, talking about the chairman, the director, collaboration, partnership, and getting a whole bunch of important things done for the region. What was your takeaway?
My biggest takeaway is it does take a village. And obviously, when you're talking about the Port Authority, there are so many different components. And just it's a dance hearing Rick and Kevin talk about their partnership, but also partnering with other key stakeholders in the area and the region. So really great segment.
Talking about airport, the bus terminal, talking about Trans-Hudson, the bridges, all kinds of stuff that matter. Path. All of it, the Port Authority, Rick Cotton, Kevin O'Toole. Check it out. Once again, we're joined by two important, significant leaders in our region. Kevin O'Toole is chairman of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, and Rick Cotton, the executive director of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. And let me disclose, Port Authority, a longtime underwriter of our programming around economic development, infrastructure, et cetera. Good to see you, gentlemen.
Good to see you, Steve.
You got it. Hey, Kevin, kick this off. The two of you have been in these two roles, which, by the way, it's rare. It may be unprecedented. Rick has been the executive director. You've been the chairman since 2017?
Correct. Eight years.
8 years. And lots of governors?
Yeah, a couple, a handful. And you know a few of them.
Yeah. How the heck have two strong leaders collaborated, worked together, and somehow put egos to the side? Kevin and then Rick.
Well, listen, when I met Rick in June of 17, we said we had to just make this place work. And we talked long and hard back in June of 17 that we had to work together, working with the governors at the time, whether Republican or Democrat, we're going to make this thing work. And it's been 8 years. And I will tell you, Rick and I have been totally hand in glove working with our commissioners, with senior staff and the 8,000 employees. And we have done amazing things with the Port Authority because we've worked together as opposed to against each other, which has happened in the past.
Yeah, just a little bit. And by the way, by way of background, Kevin O'Toole, former state senator and also one of the co-founders of O'Toole Scrivo, a significant law firm in the region. Rick, let me ask you this. When you met Kevin, and I've known Kevin for more than a few years, he says what he thinks. He's extremely candid and direct. What was your first reaction to him? And did you know, hey, we're going to have a great partnership?
Well, I think we hit it off right from the very first time we met each other. And the foundation is what Kevin just said. We both came to the table. We almost used the same words with each other. We want to get things done. And we also wanted to put behind us and the agency the divisions and the dysfunction which sometimes appeared. And so we set out to do exactly that. And we took a regional focus. We took the key ambitions of each state into account, and we've worked together to deliver. And I think the last 8 years have been very productive.
We're going to talk about what's been delivered. Let me make it clear for those folks who say, hey, what the heck is the Port Authority created in a PAC, compact of 1921, two states coming together, New Jersey and New York? Hey, wait a minute. There are a whole bunch of things that affect both states. We need to come together and do things together. That was on paper. The reality of that, as Rick and Kevin are talking about, very different, more challenging. Kevin, you and I talked about this the other day. A couple of the most significant initiatives, whether it's at the airport, through several airports, but also the bus terminal, then Rick jumped in as well. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, it's astonishing. So you're seeing renovations going on at Newark, and LaGuardia, and JFK, $19 billion at JFK. You're talking LaGuardia, which has gone from the worst to the best, and Terminal A at Newark, which is amazing. And now we're working on the planning stages for Terminal B. It's astonishing. All three regional airports, which have record numbers, are going through this massive renovation and getting recognized across the world for being as amazing in terms of state of the art. We talk about the bus terminal, which is, as you know, is from 1950s. It should have been had a wrecking ball to it probably 30 years ago. So we just passed over $4 billion in its first stage. Can't wait for that to come online. You're seeing a $3.5 billion new AirTrain in Newark. You're seeing new renovations at the port. You're seeing upgrades at the GW, $1.9 billion, $2 billion to rewire the GW. So there's a massive infrastructure being done right now, and it's overseen by Rick. And Rick was very kind to talk about what his impression was of me. I'll tell you my impression of his remains today. He's the most hardworking, the most diligent, the most transparent, most hands-on leader I've ever worked with, Steve. And Steve, I've worked, as you know, at federal, state, local, county. He's the most distinguished and amazing public servant I've ever worked with, bar none.
Well said, Rick. Let me follow up on that. Kevin mentions all these projects, and there's B, the word, the B word is in there a lot of billions. Here's the question. From a leadership point of view, from a getting things done point of view, how the heck have you gotten these approvals along with Kevin and the board and the executive team at the Port Authority? When you're talking about so much money, those are critical investments that have been avoided forever. Confronting and dealing with falling apart infrastructure, people talk about all the time. Very few people do anything. How is that connected to leadership, Rick? Talk to us.
Well, it starts with a vision, and it starts with a commitment, and it starts with being clear with the organization and indeed the public where you want to go. And it was very early on that Kevin and I committed not only to get things done, but that world class was our standard, and we are going to do that across every aspect of the operation, the buildings we built, the capital structures that we brought online, how we are going to operate the place. And we did it together. And you need to communicate clearly where you're going for the organization. You can't have different visions, and fighting is very destructive. So the emphasis that we put on it, very straightforward. As I say, world-class quality, speed of execution, getting things done, and working together to do that. And I think the agency has pulled together across all of our priorities, and Kevin and I have done it together.
But the other part of this, Rick and Kevin, which again, Kevin, let's just say Kevin O'Toole knows politics better than most, and he's had to navigate and negotiate a whole range of complex things on the Jersey side that I'm more familiar with, but obviously at the PA, Port Authority. If I'm not mistaken, each governor, the governor of New Jersey and the governor of New York, have the legal authority to, quote, veto the minutes of any meeting of the Board of Commissioners for the Port Authority. And if they veto those minutes, anything that's approved in those minutes doesn't happen. Kevin, accurate?
Yeah, absolutely accurate. And it hasn't happened on our watch, Steve. And let me tell you, because the governors on both sides understand if they do that, they'll be killing jobs, killing initiatives, killing progress, and killing any of these big projects we're talking about. And they have, and we're working on their agenda, so they wouldn't really undermine their own agendas.
However, let me get a little more complicated here. New York has a governor in place right now. Governor Hochul's there. As we do this program, it's right before, this will be seen after the election. We don't know. It could be Mikey Sherrill, could be Jack Chitterelli. How the heck does the Port Authority leadership with you as chairman, Kevin, and Rick, how do you prepare for a new governor? Because Governor Murphy will not be there in January of 2026. How do you engage he or she on the Jersey side to what's important? And how do you engage them in the process, Kevin, then Rick?
Listen, so once we have the winner, 34 days from today, we will set up a transition team. We'll have a briefing. And frankly, whether it's Congressman Sherrill, whether it's Jack Chitterelli, those folks have reached out and want to have some input now and talk about what's going on at the port. We've had some discussions. And once the election's over, professionally, and what we do, the same we did with Governor Murphy, by the way, we will sit down and talk about some of the exciting things that are happening. And it's pretty seamless, believe it or not. And for those who have been paying attention, they're not going to be shocked by some of the ambitious plans we have at the Port Authority.
Rick, jump in here because you've seen a few governors as well.
The key, in my judgment, is that the priorities that the Port Authority is working on are really shared by the governor. We're both state houses very clear in terms of what their priorities have been. That has enabled us to put together a regional agenda. But if you think about it, world-class airports is what we're building. If you look at LaGuardia, hopefully your viewers have been to Terminal A at Newark. World-class structures, widely characterized that way. And so we're going to the state houses, we're going to the public and saying, look, this is what we want to build, and we want to operate them in a way that they are rated in terms of their operations at the absolute top of the game. And that's the agenda that we're bringing to the state houses. That's the agenda we'll bring to new governors, different governors. But we've had support because these are shared objectives. No one wants the New York, New Jersey airports to be at the back of the line. They wanted them to be at the front of the line. People want the bus terminal built, and we're committed to that. So I think it's in delivery, it's in shared priorities that makes the relationship with governors work.
And Steve, to that point, you know, years ago when we started talking about the bus terminal, not everybody was on board. The locals in New York and New Jersey, not everyone understood and appreciated. We had a groundbreaking. Everybody unanimously was on board with the community boards, governors, local officials, because we took their needs into consideration, talked about what was really important to them. And now literally everybody's on board the bus terminal, which would be one of the biggest projects in the country.
It's so interesting. It's easy, and I'm not going to get in my soapbox, but people in governmental and political positions and the corporate world as well, it's easy to blame. It's easy. Why don't they do this? Or they're so easy to be against things, to build something, to create something, and then have to get other people on board. Easier said than done. To Kevin and Rick, I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you again for longtime collaboration with the Port Authority. We call it infrastructure, it's economic development, it's transportation, it's sustainable energy, it's the environment, it's all kinds of stuff and quality of life. To the chairman of the board and to the executive director of the Port Authority, thank you so much. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
See you. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Bucino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. Welcome back to Lessons in Leadership. Steve Adubato with my colleague, Mary Gamba. Mary, this is part of our Leaders in Healthcare series, and we're about to have a compelling conversation with someone who is a really impactful leader in healthcare that I've known for the last several years, Dr. Michael Loftus, Senior Vice President for System Medical Affairs at RWJ Barnabas Health, and also Chief Medical and Quality Officer at Cooperman Barnabas Medical Center, part of RWJ Barnabas Health. Dr. Loftus, good to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
You and I have talked about this offline. Quality in healthcare. Define it, explain it, so that the rest of us understand what it means.
It's a great question. I think quality is ultimately driving outcomes, right? Our goal as a system is exceptional outcomes, and what that outcome is may be different patient by patient. But when we think about quality at a system level as a leadership team, you need to be able to measure it. It's got to be something objective that you can compare apples to apples and benchmark yourself against your own internal goals and your peers. So I think quality can roll up to numbers like that. But on an individual level, quality means that patient gets everything you have to give them when they come through your doors, from my perspective. When you come to Cooperman Barnabas or you come to any RWJ Barnabas Health Hospital, we want to make sure that you are getting the best we can offer. Consistency, outcomes, and a great experience throughout the process. So to me, that would be kind of an overall definition of quality.
Well said. Let me follow up on this and let me disclose that I've done a fair amount of leadership and communication coaching at RWJ Barnabas Health, and I've worked with Dr. Loftus offline. And one of the areas we've talked about, Mike, is the importance of people with clinical, scientific research, medical backgrounds, being able to communicate as leaders in healthcare in a way that the rest of us who don't have that background will understand. That is a real priority for you, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's easier said than done, right? As a physician, you train for years to learn very specific terminology and a level of subject matter expertise that can get down to the physiology of why biology behaves the way it does, but translating that to a patient at the bedside who can really only absorb so much is a different skill set. And you know, one of the things we're very focused on is explaining things to patients in a way that they can understand, making sure that we don't use jargon, using abbreviations, et cetera. It's very easy to slip into. As physicians, they're used to communicating as efficiently and effectively as possible to a colleague in a way that summarizes a very complex situation at the highest level. But when you're communicating to a layperson or communicating a message more broadly, it needs to speak to the broader strokes. And I think when we think about how we communicate within a health system, you've got different degrees of sophistication, even on our own team, right? You're asking about communicating more broadly, but even within our own hospital, when you think about how do you message the importance of a quality or safety initiative, how do you message the importance of other priorities for the organization? When we talk, we include everyone from the physician at the bedside to the person who's delivering the food tray. Every single one of them is a part of driving those outcomes we talked about a moment ago, and you need everybody to understand that why. So I think being able to translate between the two is not natural to everybody, but it's something that we are very much focused on. When the system tries to message our priorities to individual hospitals, to individual staff, and out to the broader communities, right? We work very closely with our communities, helping them understand what's important, what's going to drive their clinical outcomes. That's a really important part of the healthcare team.
And also part of healthcare leadership. And let me also disclose, RWJ Barnabas Health has been a longtime supporter of public broadcasting and our work as well in the area of public health awareness. Mary, please.
Dr. Loftus, you're talking about collaboration, you're talking about the staff, the importance of the team and creating that culture. When it comes to recruiting, training, really just developing your people, talk a little bit about what you look for when you're recruiting, and then how do you ensure that you are giving them the resources that they need, especially in such a large system?
That's the question, right? I mean, everyone has probably heard of some of the challenges healthcare has had over the last several years recruiting a workforce, right? There has been a significant shortage of high caliber people wanting to come into healthcare in a number of fields, right? Physicians, there's an 8 to 12 year pipeline for new physicians, right, entering the workforce, but nursing and others as well. You certainly have heard that there were shortages. I think our system has done a great job of recruiting and retaining, and I think it starts with creating an environment people want to work in. And what drives someone to a particular job may be different, but universally, I think people want to come to work and feel respected, empowered, appreciated. I love my job. I love coming to work. I love the people that I work with. I really, really enjoy what I do, and I enjoy the people I do it with. And I think we strive to create that kind of environment for as many people as we can. And when you sort of what do you look for? To a certain extent, you want people who are going to fit into that, but we want people helping to build, not drill holes in the boat, right? You know, everyone is in it to help your teammates thrive. And those types of people, I think, stand out. And when you recruit folks like that onto our team, it builds. You know, again, I love doing what I do. And when you get that sense from somebody that they love what they do, that's always additive when you bring them in. And then investing in making sure once they're there, they have the tools they need, right? I say frequently in my job, I'm overhead. Unless I am providing people with the tools they need to do their job better, then I'm a waste of a salary. My only job is to make sure that I'm there to help people succeed in the job that they're doing at the bedside. And that also, I think people know that. You know, we try to make sure people have those tools. We do a program called Senior Leader Rounding, which I was, you know, doing earlier today. We were in one of our clinical units with myself and some other members of the leadership team, hearing from frontline staff in the unit what's going well, right? Shout outs and kudos to team members who make their jobs easier. And what are the pebbles in their shoe? What are the little things that we could help with very quickly to mitigate some of the little annoyance? You know, this morning the example was they were the little charging cords for one of their communication devices kept walking. You know, people use them, they steal them to use to charge their iPhone, and they're short on chargers for their devices. Like, we can fix that. That's a fixable problem, right? We can have that addressed very quickly. But little stuff I think like that shows that the leadership cares about them having the tools they need to do their job, and that retains people. We do a better job than the industry, better job than most at keeping our people, because I think they believe that we truly care about their success because we do.
Those aren't little things when they impact people's lives. Last question, Dr. Loftus. You're talking about people, the people feeling important, empowered, significant. Dare I ask, and I will, artificial intelligence in medicine, to what degree do you believe it has the potential to make us more efficient, more effective, but not simply taking people's jobs or doing people's jobs? Go ahead, please, Mike.
100%. I mean, that is, you know, if I had the crystal ball on that, it would be a much
longer. I'm trying to figure it out too.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it is an incredibly powerful tool. And what I have seen so far, that tool has allowed individual people to do their jobs more efficiently and effectively. In healthcare, it has not yet presented a use case where it's really replacing the workforce. You know, I would take a step back and say the jobs that we do are growing more complex by the minute, right? Healthcare has become so in a very positive way, right? We know more, we understand more, the physiology is more deeply understood, and so the treatments are more tailored to the individual. That it has become incredibly complex. So the ability of any one doctor, nurse, tech to truly know the scope of what they're doing is almost impossible. So these tools, I think, will allow people to do more for each patient. Well, I would argue probably maintaining similar staffing. So doing better with the same staffing as opposed to it truly eliminating people, providing better outcomes with a similar, you know, similar staffing model what we now is what I'd love to see. You know, the use case I've seen most compelling right now, I'm a radiologist by training. And so AI can look at a stack of medical imaging and say, okay, this one should maybe bump to the top of the list to be looked at by a specialist next. Right. It's not saying this is the diagnosis. It's saying there might be something a little off on this one. Let's bump it to the top of the list. Right. Because there are 20 studies on the list. That one might be read in some period of time. We're going to escalate that one up to the top. So, again, you get the interpretation by a trained board certified radiologist, but the AI tool may have bumped it up the queue in terms of getting it done more quickly.
Complex, important. And like we said in an earlier segment we did on AI and leadership is confront it or it will confront you. Deal with it. Make it work for you. Dr. Mike Loftus, one of our leaders in this series, Leaders in Healthcare from RWJ, Barnabas Health. Dr. Loftus, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks, Mike.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You guys, stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. Welcome back to Lessons in Leadership. Steve Adubato with my colleague, Mary Gamba. Mary, people really appreciate the Lessons in Leadership mini seminars. And today we're going to record one on artificial intelligence.
Yeah, did that already.
Yeah, did that. Emotional intelligence and leadership. So the graphic will come up, emotional intelligence and leadership. Emotional intelligence coined by Dr. Daniel Goleman, who wrote this groundbreaking book on emotional intelligence. So here we go. Some bullet points. You'll see them up. We'll talk about them. First, emotional intelligence equals self-awareness. Mary? What does self-awareness have to do with being a great leader?
It has everything to do with being a great leader. You need to be self-aware. You need to be aware of what your body language is communicating to people, what your tone of voice is communicating, the words that you choose to use. All of those are critical when you are communicating, and more importantly, when you're looking to lead.
All right, number two, and it's connected. Emotional intelligence equals owning your mistakes. Mary?
That is so hard for so many leaders. I know it's hard for me. You and I have had conversations in our more than two decades of coaching and mentoring people. Owning your mistakes does not mean that you are weak, just the opposite. It means that you're strong and you're setting an example for others on your team that you do need to own your mistakes and grow and learn from them.
What's that have to do with emotional intelligence?
Everything. We're talking about being self-aware. We're talking about being just in tune with what you are putting out into the world. So that has everything to do with emotional intelligence.
So real quick on this, because it connects to the next one. Emotional intelligence equals managing your moods. All right.
I'll let you take this one, Steve.
No, listen. April, I keep looking for the...
I was going to say, you just teed no. the...
April's our great makeup artist. I've been looking for this. I have these little stones, these little things that have these sayings on them, and one that says breathe, which I can't find, which means I forgot to breathe today. And the other one says gratitude. Now, the other one should say chill out, Steve. Managing my moods, managing, not me, any leader. How important is it that we're self-aware enough to manage our moods, to know that we could easily be triggered, or, and we are triggered, and therefore you're preparing yourself not to let yourself go to an unhealthy or unproductive place, which, by the way, you don't bat a thousand in. But if you
No, no one
forget
bats a
about it,
thousand. We need to forgive ourselves. We need to forgive others. But if you know that something's a trigger, you need to press pause when that trigger gets switched. You need to press pause and say, okay, how am I going to react to this? Sure, you can't literally count to 10 because you would look absolutely ridiculous, but you need to know how your attitude, how your mood impacts those around you in a
how's
negative
that
way.
emotional intelligence?
Everything. We're talking emotional intelligence to me is how the world perceives you and being aware of what you can do to just be really aware. And again, it should be emotional intelligence backslash self-awareness because you need to really know how your internal emotions, your external emotions, and what you are giving off to the world will definitely impact how they perceive you.
Okay, I got a couple of minutes left. Self-aware enough to know that we're running out of time because Elvin just told us in the chat. Here we go. You ready? Emotional intelligence equals empathy. Now, I struggle with this one too, because if empathy means really understanding where other people are coming from, and so deliver your communication as a leader in a way that they're most likely to understand and appreciate, I get it. But then sometimes I'm sitting there going, am I supposed to be so emotionally intelligent that I customize what I'm saying and that I don't say what I really mean because it might offend someone? But you need to be direct. I want to be direct and clear, and sometimes direct and clear turns people off. And so how the heck am I supposed to be empathetic?
One of the hardest parts about being a leader is recognizing it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Somebody on your team may need a little bit more hand-holding, a little bit more, give me a positive before you give me some constructive feedback. Others, like me, I'm like, Steve, just tell me what it is. We'll fix it. We'll move on. So you really do, as a leader, need to adjust your communication, your leadership style, particularly when giving feedback to the individual that you're giving that feedback to.
So how about this? 30 seconds left. The last bullet point is this, and it goes to what Mary just said. Emotional intelligence equals knowing your audience and customizing your leadership and communication to that audience. Mary and I have direct, candid, hard conversations that truthfully, I don't have with anyone else, and she has, does the same thing with me. We know each other, we know each other's audience, and there you go. Emotional intelligence and leadership, all in one video seminar for Mary and myself. This is Lessons in Leadership. Thanks for watching. I'll see you next time. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Vecino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Introducing the Helix NJ, the Health and Life Science Exchange, a new innovation district located at the heart of the Northeast Corridor, providing industries, universities, and entrepreneurs the critical ecosystem needed to turn great ideas into breakthrough realities. The Helix NJ, where ideas come to life.